Hi, this is The Nose, speaking to you from Cider Chat Central, down along Orchard Lane in the heart of Ciderville, where we are celebrating Cider Chat's 100th episode. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And on this edition of Cider Chat, we are celebrating 100 episodes, reflecting back on the past year and looking forward to the future with our special guest, The Nose. Yes, The Nose is back, and we'll be sorting through all the goings-on in Ciderville, coming right up.
Well, welcome back, Nose. It's good to see you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, let's have a little cheers here. Cheers.
Cheers. Mm. Congratulations.
Thank you. The 100th episode, huh?
It's crazy. I'm glad that you're celebrating the 100th episode and not just 2 years of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, because I could have like 5 episodes.
but we all know that you don't.
We don't. Yeah. Man, oh. It's been like a lot of opportunity to talk to some amazing people around the world.
It's really exciting.
It's really an outstanding community of people that are so sharing, who want to connect. It's nice to have this conversation, even though it might feel a little one way because, you know, I'm on the podcast here. I feel that when I'm speaking, and when we're speaking right now, you who are listening out there in Ciderville, I hope that you're raising a glass right now too, because this 100th episode is certainly a lot of hard work on this end, but we've been raising a glass consistently to each other throughout and just having a hell of a lot of fun celebrating cider together.
Well, let's raise our glasses one more time to everyone in Ciderville for joining us on this episode and many others.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Mmm. Great.
Whew. Well, what a year. Time flies.
What a year. And it feels like I'm like running a long distance race a little bit. Like I can barely keep up because there's so many people I still want to talk to and then follow up with. It just continues to grow. It's like yeast. You know how yeast grows and it keeps on bubbling over and you add a little more, you know, sweetness to that and the yeast keeps on gobbling it up and creating more and more. That's what it feels like in Ciderville to me. I mean, there is no end in sight. It's just abundance beyond and beyond.
Well, the worldwide base that you've created and that you've come in contact with has been really amazing to be a part of, and to hear from so many people all over the world who are into cider has been really amazing.
They just want to be connected, and I want to be connected with them. It's really been a privilege to have this opportunity to find out what's going on in Japan, or Australia, or Chile, or Estonia. Certainly the folks in Asturias, that's amazing. And the UK, which I have yet to get to. Maybe we should talk a little bit about that.
You have some plans around that.
I do. Launching Totally Cider Travels coming up for 2018, and looking at going to the UK this coming April. So Ciderville should really listen to that, because I know that's going to be an awesome trip. I'm just still holding back because, you know, you got to get all your T's crossed and your I's dotted.
I've never known you to hold back, Rhea.
I try to drink in moderation. You could always leave that cider at the table. There'll always be another cup.
I wasn't just referring to drinking cider, but
I can't help it. I have the
nose knows, right, William?
Right. Yeah, I have epilitis, and it's kind of like that yeast just being fed with so much richness of apple love. I just can't hold back.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. Oh, you gots to skeet. It's a rat-a-tat-a, 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 bala. Rat-a-tat-a, 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 holla. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, beat me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, beat me a thank.
Yeah, looking at going to the UK, and I'm really stoked about that because I want to speak to so many cider makers there and get them on the podcast. You know, have had them in the past, Neil Worley, Tom Oliver, Neil McDonald, Bill Bradshaw. But there are a lot of folks that I can't wait to touch base with, and I feel like I was really inspired by UK cider. That was the first really non-US cider that I had. So I can't wait to get there because I haven't spent time there, and it just so happened to be on the other side of the channel because that's where my work gets me, and to be able to get myself over, you know, I have to like do it economically. So it's not for not wanting to get there, and really plan on going there, and hopefully with perhaps you listening right now out there in Ciderville.
Well, from what I've seen from the sneak preview, it looks like an amazing trip.
Oh my gosh, it is. And you know, you don't want to get overdosed. You want to keep yourself satiated when you're out traveling. So I'm stoked to be able to bring both my passion of cider and those connections and also my travel experience to really create something that's going to be restful too. And a blend of cider and food, just feeling, you know, so when you leave a trip, I think a good trip is one that you leave where you go home maybe a little exhausted, but also a little rested too, and ready to like return back on the travels sooner than later versus, oh, totally exhausted.
Well, and you're a great guide in the sense that you also, you know a lot about cider, but you don't know, but you'd be the first to admit that you don't know everything and that
that's
you're
right
there learning as much as anybody else. And I think that's a fun part of traveling in a group like that,
is
learning together and
absolutely
experiencing new things.
Yeah, that's so true. I love that. I mean, who is an expert in Ciderville? When you have something like a craft, staying in the beginner's mind is really like the best place to be, and that takes a bit of skill. You could get a little egocentric or kind of think you're on the top of the game, and everybody will say that about you, but a real skilled master is the first one is to say, I'm a beginner. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, sometimes I just gloss over when people start going, you know, science on me.
And at the same time, you love to geek out, but you do that for a limited time only.
That's right.
Eventually, you just have to drink the cider.
Right, yeah.
And enjoy it.
Let's drink a little bit more cider to that. Here you
okay.
go, cheers.
Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, wow. So that's happening, UK, and then another trip in the fall to Normandy. So again, I'm going to hold back on that. That's all I'm going to say right now. That'll be around this time next year, probably a little bit earlier in the fall.
We want to leave you hungry or thirsty for a little bit more.
Thirsty. We won't let that barrel go dry. And if you want to get in on that earlier than later, the first folks that are going to get dibs on those trips are the patrons of Cider Chat. The Patreon page, which is set up for content providers like myself to get some kickback to just host your show. It's the fact that somebody took the time to sign up, to connect, and to, you know, even send a dollar a month. That means so much to me to keep on going. I really tip my glass once again. Cheers to all the patrons out there who have helped. You know who you are. I really appreciate it. And also to Current Cider in Pennsylvania and Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, and also the Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg, who are part of the Cider Going Up campaign. Wow. So thank you so much. Cheers again.
Cheers. I remember last year there being some, you know, I'm remembering about a being in Cider Journal.
That was right? Last year. Tom works Cider Journal, and he asked me a couple questions about like cider trends and stuff, and you know, I didn't really know how to answer that then. Like, I don't know all the answers, just like we were just saying, but you know, there's definitely two specific areas that have really stuck out to me in this past year. And the first one is just, you know, because they're kind of screaming beings, is the wild yeast, that topic there.
I meant what's changed for you in the last year. Before we go into what your favorite things
you know
are right now, I know. Wild yeast and terroir, that's the hot topics right now. We know. They're the neon signs that are glowing in the room. But so for you as a podcaster, what have you noticed has changed for you in your podcast?
Well, I never grow tired of talking to Ciderville. I enjoy that so much. And it's not just because I enjoy hearing myself speak, but I enjoy in what some people really hate in the podcasting world is editing and creating an experience, almost like Prairie Home Companion, bringing in the music and creating an episode that you really dig, you know, turning on the background on a Friday night or whenever you're able to listen to your audio on demand.
Everything we don't say is everything we don't say is
absurd. So that hasn't changed for me. In fact, my enjoyment of it has increased. It's just a matter of getting the time to do it. I passionately love that. What was the question?
wait, one more.
Oh, I'm parched. What was the question? doing the podcast. What has changed? Well, the quality of the podcast has changed.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course, it's just like cider making. The more you do it, hopefully the better you get. And I think the regular listeners, they have noticed that. And I was speaking to Joby the other day. And a big tip of the hat to Joby, who's also a patron. He's going to be recording at Cider Days coming up in another weekend. And he's also helped me out with a recorder, because the whole time I set up the Patreon page, I was trying to get a new recorder, because I have this little black Roland 05, which is such an amazing little bugger. But
workhorse.
It's a workhorse, but it's hard for me to edit. I won't go into the specifics of that. It's like you can't change too many things up. But he's getting me a new recorder, which is going to help out immensely, especially if I'm out on the road and one breaks down. The quality, he was saying, you know, has definitely improved, and I agree. And that there's nothing better than that, you know, just nothing better. So that's been a big thing, and like any skill that you keep on practicing, you get better and better. And the big news is on the front for me is, I believe it's because of this podcast. I really don't know how they found me, but I was approached by a publishing company based both in the U.S. and in the U.K. to write a couple books. I thought it was a total joke when I was approached. Like, I don't even know.
Is this a scam?
I thought it was a scam. No, I totally did. I thought, like, you know, somebody's messing with me. And it isn't. It isn't a scam, as far as I know. So,
we'll get back to you on that one, Siderville.
Yeah. But, so I'm waiting for the final contract to sign for that. So I always, again, hesitate until everything's crossed and dotted and all that. But looks like this winter I'm going to be first working on a book, Cider Through Time in America. And it's going to be essentially like an Instagram book, all images and photos of cider since it was first starting to be really consumed regularly by the colonists. So that's over 300 years ago to present day. And then I'll be doing a second book on beer, because I also write about craft beer. So I think that doing the podcast, my writing skills increase. Thank goodness there's good editors and some great opportunities. That is huge news for me, and I can't wait to start, you know, really digging in there. And so that's another piece here. If you have some amazing photos out there of your cidery, of your family, you know, maybe as a kid you're making cider, or maybe your great-great-great-great grandparents, ancestors, aunt and uncles are doing something, kind of like my 1880s press that I got at the auction earlier this summer, do send it this way, and who knows, I might be able to get into that book, and you could be part of the history of cider in America, which would be really nice. That's an amazing project. It was kind of like a gift to land on my lap.
Well, that deserves a huge congratulations. Let's
thank
cheers
you,
to
thank
that.
Thank you. I know.
Toast to your success.
Thank you. Thank
as
you.
As a writer, which you already have some success at.
Yeah, I am an author already, but that was nonfiction, and this is nonfiction too, but it's telling a different kind of story. So it's going to be a lot of fun to write, because the best thing about writing, kind of like podcasting, is that you get to think a thought through. And that's also true with cider making. When you start with the apple, and if you're orchard-based, you know exactly what I mean, you get to start from that tree all the way through to that glass. And that actually leads me to another piece here. Having gotten this old press and doing that now and able to collect my own apples this year, I have been working my tail off at a level, I mean, I've never done before. So my appreciation for the product that commercial cider makers are doing has gone up, you know, 150%. It is a lot of work to make cider. And if you don't think that that product is worth it, then you are so off on the wrong path. When a cider maker is starting from that planting all the way to the pressing, dang, it's so much. A lot of work.
Well, I think that brings us to an important point, which is consumers want to know, why is this bottle of cider $14? It's as much as a bottle of wine. And I think that's confusing to people sometimes. I think that's a good point, the amount of effort it takes to create that product.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at like an ice cider. It could be $25 or $30. And that's not even a 750 mil bottle. That's much smaller. It's that beautiful dessert bottle. But when you think about how much cider needs to be frozen to extract that concentrated juice and then to make the cider, the work is enormous.
Was it 4 gallons to one?
It's about about 4 to 1 ratio. That means what we're talking about there is you have 4 gallons of fresh pressed juice that the traditional method they would be doing up in Quebec is you put your fresh pressed juice outside to be frozen, and then it separates from the water and you extract that juice and then you ferment it to make your ice cider. 4 to 1 with an ice cider. It's a lot of concentration, and I know we're going to be talking more about this. Hopefully going up and seeing Eleanor up at...
I can't wait. At Eden's! Woohoo!
Eden's! Up in Newport, Vermont. Hopefully, I tried to get up there last year and really hoping to do it this, because who doesn't love Eleanor? Hoping to see her today while this podcast is going live on the 25th at the Hidden Stars at New York City.
That's right. Well, speaking of ice cider, I'm wondering, looking back at this past year, what other methods of cider making have you learned about in these last 50 episodes that maybe you didn't know about the first time? I remember, you know, last year there was a show on keeving and just different cider making methods, and I'm wondering if you can think of anything that comes to mind.
Well, you know, truthfully, when I used to teach cider making, cider days, you know, I used to put my cider next to my wood stove when I brought it home. And one thing I've learned across the past 100 episodes is it's all about low and slow. And low temperatures, about 60 degrees Fahrenheit, and letting that have like a consistent fermentation. Now, you know, I approached cider making really differently when I was teaching it. So my skills have gone up quite a bit. So that's something I've been learning straight across. Like, wow, there was so little I didn't know. The big thing that's really stuck out for me this year, and it really happened more recently, but, you know, there's a big soft spot in Ciderville for pears and Perry pears.
We love Perry pears.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I didn't realize is that Calvados in a certain region of France is 70% Perry pear and only 30% cider. Now, I didn't know that, and I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't gone there and spoken to the makers, because it's not something that's put out there. And when I had Didier Bedou on there, he certainly didn't mention, because he's in a particular region. So as I'm going out into Ciderville, it's like breaking down these little regions. It's like there's New England, right, in the U.S., but you got to break it down to Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and then within Vermont. You know, you're in northern Vermont, and then you're in southern Vermont. So there's all these regional specificities, I think that's the right way to say it, I'm not sure, specifics for different regions that really showed me, it kind of was like a light bulb. And going to the Domfront region really blew me away, because I was able to bite into pears and have like the juice seeping down it. It was so sweet. And being able to taste that has really upped my game in certainly tasting poré or perry. And having, you know, again, I haven't been to the UK, and there's some darn good perry being made, but it feels like that is an epicenter in Domfront. And it, the other piece was there is, and I haven't gone live with this podcast yet, but that was with Philippe in the lower region of France, or town. I went to two extremes. You know, you're going to like the real sanitized cidery, and then you go to the classic, is not straw, but, you know, you're just flopping the pears in. There's no washing. They go right in. They get grounded up and put into this old press, cloth and wrap press, and then it's put down into an area. It wouldn't pass, like in for U.S. specifications, but the perry that comes out of there blows your mind away. It kind of actually confirmed in some ways. Like, I've always made cider kind of like grandma's way. You know, grandma meaning, like, you don't worry about things too much. You just feel what's right, and you put in a little bit of this, a little salt, a little pepper.
That was my grandpa, not my grandma.
Okay.
Just saying.
Right, I hear you. Well, my grandma made pumpkin pancakes to die for. Oh, my gosh. She called them Blinkies.
But she was very specific about it.
She had to use a certain bowl, but she never measured. She never measured, and she had to use a frying pan that never got washed. And that is a little bit when you go outside of the real intense structure that sometimes you have in the U.S., you go out in the rest of the world, there's like a whole range of cider making techniques there.
You just made all the chefs that are listening to this episode cringe, I just want to say.
Not all of them, by any means. And I'm sure a lot of folks are going, hell yeah, yeah, just lighten up. So cider making techniques, just to kind of be paying attention more to, you know, the more science piece of it. But I think it was more really, for me, the fruit, about the apples and the pears that I'm learning more about. Because it really starts with the fruit and starts with the orchard care. That's what I've really learned, the grafting and all. Those are my skills have really increased quite a bit. And not that I could do it. It's just I'm learning more about it. And that excites me.
You learned a lot about that from Sue and Lou this past year.
Yes, I did, yeah. Wonderful people, and also Colin Scott from EJ Orchards. Actually, folks should know who are going to Cider Days that you should contact Colin ahead of time if you want to get some of his cider-specific apples. He's going to be selling that for $20 at Cider Days. And you could get, I'll put his contact in the show notes here.
And plan on him selling out. They won't last.
Yeah, I know. And man, they're good. Good product. So that's one piece that really blew me out of the water. And then it's about wild yeast. And I think Jerome DuPont really just hit that out the ballpark with saying, you know, we have to relax about it and allow the yeast to kind of go and learn how to manage it, but not to necessarily control it in a way. And so when I say wild yeast, I feel like I'm also speaking about terroir.
Before you go into terroir, let me just ask you this.
Yes.
While we're talking about wild yeast and our love of wild yeast fermentation,
mm-hmm.
I've now heard from several different cider makers that they are trying to, when they're producing on a commercial level, they're looking for consistency and repeatability, and it's really difficult to rely on the wild yeast for that. So while I know your experience in Europe with many of the cider makers is based on their wild yeast fermentation and the fact that they're able to do small batches and have various different vintages maybe that represent that year's production. We can't do that in the U.S., and the U.S. cider makers are having to really rely on having to choose a yeast and make that product stable so that they can bottle that and know that every year, from year to year, they're putting out the same products on the shelves. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think you just did. You did a great synopsis of it, and I think that kind of sucks, mm-hmm. You know, that American cider makers are, well, it's about consumers too, expecting consistency. Like you go to your fast food and you always want your hamburger cooked the exact same way. You expect that. But in orchard-based products where you're working with a craft and you're working with seasons and all that, that's the beauty of cider, is that it's always going to be different from year to year. And unfortunately in America, you have to, you know, walk to a different beat.
So do you think that's a culture differential then?
I only think in cider, because you don't expect that in a Sauvignon Blanc or a Pinot Noir or a Cabernet. Or you don't expect that to taste the same way each year. In fact, the excitement is that
it changes.
Yeah, it changes every year. 2010 to 2017 is going to be really different. And that's excitement. Like opening those two different bottles with Eric Bordelais, the 2018 and 2015 Argolette, were so different.
So what would need to happen in the cider world, in the cider market, in order to change that shift, to make that happen?
I think if U.S. cider makers are kind of kowtowing to right now the government kind of scriptures on what you can or can't do on bottling, and you can't do that on bottling, I mean, there's different ways people are getting around that.
Labeling, you're talking
Labeling,
about.
Labeling, yes, thank you. Why not just talk about terroir? Start talking about terroir in a way, like the terroir of this environment, the climate this year, and start marketing in that way will, one, help them be able to have variation in their product. There won't be such an expectation to have it the same way every single year. And to also provide education to the consumers, who I think are really, really hungry. I mean, people out there in Ciderville who aren't makers themselves, who just want to drink, they are thirsty for more knowledge on this. So why not give it to them and start talking about terroir? Why are we waiting 10 years for cider orchards to come up? I mean, we have what we have. Like Jerome again said, if we had all the same apples all around the world, it would be boring.
I think that cider producers around the world also have to relax. In Normandy, we're producing cider for many generations, but with our apples and the type of apples we have. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think that part of the excitement of the cider world is that there is a diversity of ciders. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be really sad to see all the cider producers using the same apples mm-hmm. and using the same process Absolutely. To produce the same cider. So relax, use the local apples you have, the technique you have. A bit of knowledge doesn't hurt, of course.
Right.
I think that's what's gonna make cider successful.
If you're working on culinary apples, so be it. There's some damn good culinary ciders out there.
Well, I know your love of terroir and how important that's become to you, and how much more educated you've become about that in the past year. My question about creating more of a focus on terroir is, what happens to the cideries that are in the U.S. and all over the world that might be in regions that they can't grow apple trees, and they're having to have that juice shipped in, and maybe they're using something that's from their local region, such as Hawaii might be probably adding pineapple juice into their apple juice to make a Hawaiian cider, just for one example.
Right.
How do you not lose those those innovative producers in the cider market if they don't have that terroir that you're speaking of?
Well, they do have the terroir. It's just being shipped in from somewhere else. Put aside a 5-gallon jug of that cider that you're shipping in and let it go wild and get to know your juice a little bit better. Unfortunately, when you're shipping in juice, you know, you're not out there in the orchard picking it. And so you don't have that same connection to the juice as you would if you're an orchard-based cidery. And, you know, I'm not saying everybody should be orchard-based cidery by any means. But at least let a 5-gallon batch go there and try to put it into your marketing somewhere, or your education, or have a class at your cidery, a tasting night, to talk about that. You know, start building up your geek population, your aficionados within your community. And if you're in like a tourist hub, something like Hawaii or different parts of California or even Florida, or even anywhere, if you're doing flavored ciders, and that is your market. I mean, pineapple is like one of the most popular ciders on the market. So be it. Let it be that. That's okay.
So you're talking about the value added, adding value to the product by educating both the employees that are making the
yourself.
Cider. Yourself. And the consumers.
That's right. So that you don't just sell the focus is not just the apple base with other products added into it. I think cider, for it to stay in the long term, has to first be apples. And that is a base point, and that you increase your skills there. And then you could add on to that.
You've had that experience as a cider judge before, right? That you want to have when you're judging cider. It's been your experience that you want to taste the apple. If it's infused with ginger, or it's infused with something else. You still want to be able to find the apple in order to.
But people don't know what that apple tastes like. You know, they think it's going to taste like biting into an apple. It's just like when you bite into a grape, it's going to taste different than if you're going to be drinking that wine that's been made from that same grape. So there's all these judgings happening with cider around the world. All these big competitions, which I actually have a hard time with, to tell you the truth, because I don't feel folks know enough about terroir or about a palate and have drank enough cider from around the world to really be able to give a fair judging of a cider, because they don't know what to taste there. And you can have that one workshop on tasting cider, but you can't learn to judge out of a book. You have to taste a hell of a lot of cider to increase your skills. And so then you know when you say, oh, this tastes like the apple, you're not talking it tastes like a Honeycrisp or a Macintosh or a cider apple like a Dabernet or, you know, an Arkansas Black. You know what that particular apple is bringing out. You're going to know what that particular tannin structure is, what that terroir of that soil is going to taste like. That is the taste of the apple. It's different than tasting like apple pie. And that is a lot of the confusion out there on the market, because people pick up cider. What's the number one thing that makers sell is their sweet cider. They don't sell out of their dry, they sell out of their sweet. And yes, at least in this market here, Americans have a sweet tooth. So you have to play to the market. You got to make a living, no doubt. But at the same time, don't miss the opportunity of each crop that comes into your cidery, even if you're importing it from somewhere around the world, to not let one of those batches go wild and get to know that terroir. If you're importing, I don't know, apples from Brazil, wherever the heck it's coming from, get to know that, and let's celebrate with those wild yeasts, because they've been around for a long time just waiting to be discovered, like all these forgotten orchards.
Well, I'm happy to celebrate all the innovation that continues to be happening in the cider world and the cider market, and also for Cider Chat, and looking forward to the future of traveling with Cider Chat.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, me too. We got coming. What are we looking forward for the next 50 episodes? We're looking at doing some of these, you know, totally cider travel trips and recording podcasts and meeting the folks out there in Ciderville. Continue to do cider festivals. And doing some books. There's
hearing more about those books.
I know. Can't wait. So there's a lot. We're only on the edge of the orchard right now. And there's a lot more rows to be walking up and down on. I can't wait. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, it was good to kind of clear the shelf a little bit and get some of those thoughts out there, because I have this amazing opportunity on Cider Chat to talk to so many people and trying to figure out what exactly am I learning on this journey. And there is a lot. Sometimes it's hard to put it into the landscape and come on the other side with a clear goal. I want to follow up on something that the nose asked me about with the U.S. cider makers specifically. Is when I say that they're kowtowing to the government, they have to. You know, the government rules any beverage that is fermented into alcohol. It's real tight restrictions, and different associations are working really hard to make it easier for cider makers and for the consumers. That is a slow process indeed. So in the meanwhile, what can we all do? We could support those cideries by buying those bottles of $14 cider. It costs a lot of labor, time, and love, really blood, sweat, and tears to bring that cider out into the market. So that's a great thing to do, and I highly recommend that. That is time well spent. And eventually down the line, we will see, I believe, vintage cider being able to be marketed in that way, and that the cider industry will have its rightful place on the American landscape for sure, and I hope on the world landscape too, so that we're talking about that and really rejoicing the vintages that happen year to year, because it might be dry in one country and really wet in another, and that will have an effect on the apple crop and the pear crop. There's a lot out there, Ciderville, and I really appreciate this journey with you. I want to give you a little reminder coming up on November 3rd. If you are headed to Cider Days, which takes place in Franklin County in Massachusetts, this is the 23rd annual Cider Days. It is a four-day event, because you are flying in or traveling in on Thursday of next week to this really broad range cider festival. There's workshops throughout. There is a cider salon that's a 2-session tasting. Makers are coming in from the UK as I know it, Germany, maybe Italy, Asturias, Basque region, probably all over the map. It's going to be tons of fun. So if you haven't gotten your tickets to some of these events, they might be sold out. Oh, I can't help it. So bring a glass, grab a bottle, and show up to the cider meetup that's going to take place on November 3rd. That's a Friday night. It is the second annual cider meetup taking place at the Root Cellar. It's going to happen from 6 to 8 p.m. You could, of course, still hang out there. And the Root Cellar is opening their doors for only a $5 corking fee if you bring a bottle, that is, that you want to share. And get to know the folks who are coming from all over the map and get to chit-chat with them. I actually met up with Garth Shanifelt, who was on this podcast a while back. His business, Art Bev, is based in Greenfield, and Garth said that he'd be there. So I hope some of the local cider makers in the region could show up if they have the time. And for anyone, enthusiasts, anyone in the cider trade, that's set up as a little bit of a kickback time to get to know folks. So again, that is the Root Cellar. I'll be putting that up on the Cider Chat Facebook page, the invite, so folks could just get a little bit more info there on where it is, the address, and all that. Should be a good time. The whole weekend will be fantastic. And if you are listening today, when it goes live on October 25th, I am in New York City at the New York City Cider Week, heading to Astor Place tonight, where the event called Hidden Stars is taking place. That is a cider tasting. There's going to be a lot of really nice commercial cider makers pouring and chatting it up. And I'll be walking about. You'll see me recording some chit-chat with folks attending. Can't wait to do that. That's one of my most favorite things to do, is to speak to people out there in Ciderville. Perhaps that will be you. Yeah. Well, look, I'm ready to roll out of here, and you should know at the end of this episode, we're going to hear all those voices over the past 50 episodes that joined in on Cider Chat. It's a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. In the meanwhile, this is Rhea Windcaller on the 100th episode, saying ciao for now, but looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Hi there, this is Michelle McGrath, Executive Director of the United States Association of Cider Makers.
Hi, this is Mike Schilling from Beerology in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Hi, this is Chuck Shelton from Albemarle Cider Works in North Garden, Virginia.
Hi, this is Eric Bordelais from Chateau de Hauteville in Charchigny.
Hi, this is Hugh McKellar of RealCiderReviews.com, based in Sydney, Australia.
Hello, this is Nicole Todd from Santa Cruz Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California.
Hello, my name is Perry. That's not short for Pierce. It's Perry, as in a Perry pear.
Hi, everybody. My name is Anthony Fernandi. I'm working for La Sidra and the Asturias 21 Foundation as international delegate. And I'm here presenting the International Hall of Gala Ciders.
Hi, this is Alvar Rosima from Jani Hansa Cider in Estonia.
Hi, this is Bartosz Galka speaking from Poland. Our cidery is located in the south of Poland. The name of the cidery is Cider Smykan. The name of the company is Slow Flow Group.
Hi, this is Brian Rutzen from the Northmen, Chicago's first cider bar.
Hi, this is Luis Rabine from Posma, Canary Islands.
My name in Spanish or Lawrence?
Yeah, you could say it. Is that how you would say it in English, Lawrence?
Lawrence.
How would you say it in Spanish?
Lorenzo. But normally we said in Catalan, Lawrence. Sounds well or not?
I think it sounds very nice. Go as how you identify yourself, because okay. People want to get the flavor of who you are.
Okay. Hi, this is Lorenz Frigola from Moma Cider. We are located in Girona, north of Catalonia, in Spain.
Hi, this is Marlene Araújo from Ponte Lima, Portugal.
Hi, this is Maddie Beeson from Durham, North Carolina and Black Twig Cider House.
Hi, this is Jeppe Gins from Fire Cider on the little Danish island Fire.
Hi, my name is Apple, and it's a pleasure to meet you, though I think we've met before many, many times.
Hello, this is Shea Comfort, the Yeast Whisperer, from the Bay Area, California.
Hi, I'm Nicole Ward from Forgotten Ciders and Eastman's Antique Apples.
And I'm Rafe Ward.
I am Oscar Garcia Buster from Mayador Cider.
Hi, this is Dan Young from Tandem Ciders of Suttons Bay, Michigan.
Hi, this is Teddy Weber from Tin Hat Cider, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Perfect, and this time, let's tell people where Tin Hat Cider is.
Oh, okay.
Location.
Yep. Hi, this is Teddy Weber from... Oh, no. Okay, take three. Hi, this is Teddy Weber from Tin Hat Cider in Warren, Vermont, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Perfect.
Hi, this is Stephanie Carson.
And this is Aaron Carson.
From Gypsy Circus Cider Company.
Hi, this is Joe Getz of Current Cider in Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm Charles McGonigal from Apple True Winery in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Lindsay Zahn of On Reserve, a wine law blog.
Hi, this is Garth Schoenefeld. I'm the general manager of Artisan Beverage Cooperative, crafters of Catalyst Kombucha, Ginger Libation, and Green River Ambrosia Meads, right here in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Hi, this is Patrick Ma from Simple Cider in Tasmania.
Hi, I'm Ezra Sherman.
And I'm Autumn Stoshek.
From Eve Cidery in Vinette, New York.
This is Alex Crow.
Thanks, Alex, for being a podcaster on Cider Chat.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Brad Glover of Swilled Dog Hard Cider in Franklin, West Virginia.
This is Colin Scott from E&J Scott Orchards from Buckland, Massachusetts.
Hi, this is ADK from Rambourne Cider Company in Luxembourg. Hi, this is Jérôme Dupont from Domaine Dupont in Pays d'Auge, located in Normandy.
Hi, this is Vincent Godefroy from the Cider House of Bretteville du Grand Co. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
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 Ah!